Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
Welcome to College Football Roundtable. Your source for college football coverage, including major storylines, playoffs, and can't miss game previews and picks each week. College Football Roundtable brought to you by Ask for Football.
Welcome back to the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. Hey, we're back. It's week two. I'm your host, Rob, the Angry Colonel in Fayetteville, North Carolina. But week one is in the books. We saw some basketball scores against cupcakes. We saw a couple good contests. We saw a lot of QB power in week one, which is different. And hey, man, there's a trend this season that is, are we seeing an indication of underdeveloped offenses by a lot of running quarterbacks, or is that just the new trend in college football this season? We have a bunch of topics this week that we're going to cover, but there's also some other things that we need to talk about. Anyway, what's up, Trash Talkers? Welcome back to the College Football Roundtable, or if you'd like to call it Ring Knocker Radio, three O's and an NCO, whatever you choose, that's what we're here to for, but we're here to talk about college football. I'm your host, Rob, in Fayetteville, North Carolina. You also know me as the Angry Colonel. We got Dano Icabesa calling to you out of coastal Connecticut. We got Omar coming to you this week, which is awesome. We have him on the show from the great state of Oklahoma, and Trigger Joe is from calling from the home of the Big House. We're going to go around the horn real quick and say hello to everyone and see how their weekend was. However, we're going to lead off with Joe because I think he has some commentary that is very, very interested. Like, as soon as the Western Michigan game went off the air, the Discord blew up and everybody in the Firsty Club was like, we have to find out what Joe has to say about this. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the floor over to you. Then we'll go to Omar and then Dan. Thanks.
Yeah. Like they say, to go ahead and address the 500-pound elephant in the room. I did attend the Michigan game on Saturday with my son, and it was officially the ugliest win in the history of any team I root for. Gentlemen, when I tell you that before the ball left Bryce Underwood's hand on the second Hail Mary that's being disputed by some, Michigan had already taken a loss on several levels in my eyes. I'm being genuine. Now, I don't want to get into the Blue Falcon ahead of time, so I won't say a whole lot other than there is a problem in Ann Arbor. And if this coming Saturday is as embarrassing as last Saturday, the fan base is going to start to turn about the quarterback issue and who's going to play there. So that was my take from the Big House, and I'll get further in depth with it. But I witnessed it from the 50-yard line from some of the best seats I've ever been in. And it's not a good report. There's an effort problem. There's a motivation problem. Sloppy. I can't think of a good adjective other than JJ Buchanan said his prayers the night before and blessed us with a miracle victory that nobody in the country thought we deserved. I don't think they deserved it.
But yeah, I think that's fair.
It's a hell of a crowd pop for my son's first game, though. Hey, you know.
Yeah. I mean. All that being said, I'm sure like that it's an enjoyable experience if you're on the correct side of history, I guess. And only time will tell. I know that Western Michigan is like there are some wailing and gnashing of teeth. They're pursuing, you know, different avenues to try and get the game overturned. At the end of the day, you know, the court of public opinion has spoken, you know, and I think that's going to carry more weight over time than any decision that, you know, some legal body is going to make. And quite frankly, the NCAA doesn't have much teeth when it comes to dealing with this stuff, you know. So we'll see what happens. But that being said, over to Omar. How was your weekend?
Oh, it was great. I mean, all I have to say is like ESPN Unlimited being on the quad box, YouTube TV, game changer. It's like college. It's like ESPN game plan. Back when I was a kid, I used to wish, you know, we had more money so we could expand our horizons with the games we watch. It's like now as a college football fan, like there's pretty much any game I want to watch in the quad box. It's there. So it was amazing. I have to say, though, you know, with the whole Michigan, not to pile on Joe, like the whole Michigan thing made me sick to my stomach in a way that a game hasn't made me sick to my stomach since 2023 Boston College Army. But that being said, though, I didn't watch most of the Michigan game. I actually spent, I guess we'll talk about it later with Locks. I spent most of my like Saturday night watching VMI Virginia Tech. which was equally hard to watch, if not more, in a very, very bad way. I mean, VMI, the key debts are trying to figure out the triple option, and it's not looking good so far, but, you know, there's growing pains.
Yeah, for sure. And you would think that, you know, that's the whole reason why, you know, smaller schools run the option, is because it provides them more opportunity. And the only opportunity that they had was to catch the bus ride home. But I hope that check was good, because, I mean, playing, you know, Virginia Tech at home, Enter Sandman, like, that's kind of, you know, that's kind of deflating, actually, because it's like, you go through that whole experience, which is probably cool, all the pregame stuff and the hype and everything else like that, and then you just get skull drug. Like, I was not expecting a basketball score at all in a college football game, you know. So moving on, Dano, how about you? How was your weekend?
I had a good weekend. Met my daughter's new boyfriend. He seemed like a decent dude. I liked him okay. It's pretty much irrelevant considering that she is leaving the country in 2 weeks. But I, you know, it was nice, and she is only ever brought home one other boyfriend, so that was good, and we didn't have to kill him, so that was also good. His body's not buried in the backyard, so that's, you know, I didn't need your help, Rob.
No, that's fair.
Did you tell me you know a grunt that'll do something?
I didn't have to. That was the beauty.
Yeah, that's fair.
Rob already texted me the offer. He was like, oh, I thought you were asking for my help. you know, with the Michigan thing, I was so pleased that I don't have a rooting interest. I was like, God, that sucks. And then I turned the channel because, you know, I don't have to care as an Army/SEC fan. To answer your question, though, yeah, I think Coach Munkin's success at Army has been super influential in bringing back quarterback power. I mean, how could it not be? I see teams running quarterback power in a way that I don't remember seeing it 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, either Army is influencing them or no one is, because who does it more successfully?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, after you watch Bryson Daly do it, I'm sure there were plenty of offensive coordinators that said, you know, we don't have to do it 20 times a game, but this play works.
Well, and the other part of it is, if you look at it, both Bryson Daly and Cale Helms were the leading rushers as quarterbacks in the country, running basically the QB power. And it's like, hey, look, if I run the QB power, just, you know, knowing offensive line schemes and everything else, that gives me an extra blocker. Absolutely. So if I have a, you know, if I have an athletic dual threat guy, that's just another layer that I can add on to my offense, which will be helpful.
And you saw a guy like Haynes King, who's absolutely not one dimensional, make really good use of it last year. So yeah, I don't think that's an accident. I think that's a trend.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. And speaking of somebody that is trending in the right direction that will help you find your next home, let's play some bills. If you listened to the show before, you know that we have a sponsor here. Her name is Jocelyn Bradley. She's a realtor. She is a class of 2010 in the Long Gray line. She served as an Army logistics officer, where she honed her passion for impacting people's lives. As a dedicated realtor, she brings the same commitment to you when you're helping, when you're trying to find your dream home. Jocelyn provides exceptional personalized service to ensure a seamless home buying experience that's tailored to your needs. Beyond Fort Bragg, Jocelyn has an extensive network of trusted veteran realtors all across the country, ready to support you no matter where your PCS takes you. Whether you're relocating locally or across the country, Jocelyn makes recommendations at no cost, and she will connect you to a professional of integrity in your next market. As a proud supporter of Ask for Football, and we're going on, is it 2 years or 3 years? Like, I can't even remember now. She's been around for so long, which is great, right? But Jocelyn is here to help you find your next home. Reach out today and make your next move effortless. Thanks. Dano, over to you for the Service Academy recap.
All the service academies won. I don't think that was a surprise. We talked a lot about Army beating up on Bryant yesterday on the Army show. So I'm not going to get into that one. Army obviously plays South Florida this week. Navy beat up on Towson. I think that was probably the most competitive of the three games, in the sense that Towson looked like they were basically competitive through about the first quarter and a half. I said to James privately that I thought Navy's offense looked a lot like Army's offense last year. They look pretty dependent on Braxton Woodson, who's a great athlete, don't get me wrong, but him running the football is like a very substantial portion of their offense right now. So you know, we'll see how well that works over the course of the season. And then Air Force probably surprised me the most by just beating the brakes off of Duquesne. I wasn't surprised that they won. I wasn't even surprised that they held Duquesne to a low score overall, but I didn't think that they'd shut those dudes out. Like, that defense might be better than we think, and I'm really interested to see how they play against North Dakota State. So on the D3 side, I don't know if they played yet. You said Coast Guard is at Curry this week. That's one of my wife's alma maters. And the Merchant Marine Nichols, Merchant Marine Academy is hosting Nichols this weekend. So that ought to be interesting.
Yeah.
I work with quite a few Merchant Marine guys.
That's pretty cool. So, yeah, you know, the service academies being what they are, like watching Navy play, like Braxton Woodson had like 22 carries. Like, dude, you can't.
He had a decent number of carries. Yeah. He was doing a lot.
You can't do that all season. Right. And I think that's one of the things, like when you go into, like, if you go back in the Wayback Machine a decade now, because it was 2016, that's what cost Navy the 2016 game, right? Their quarterback was nicked up. They had to put their backup in and they really didn't have a plan. And, you know, when you have a run, you know, quarterback led option offense, if that guy gets hurt, you're playing with fire. And so, you know, as much as I would, you know, don't want to wish bad on the kid, like, trust me, I don't, but, you know, injuries do happen. And if you run the ball 20, 25 times a game with no spelling, especially as you start getting with the bigger players and they have Notre Dame, like, that could be pretty costly in the future.
So one thing they did do is that they did rotate in their backup. They got their backup probably more reps than Army got their backups, which was impressive.
Yeah.
Honestly. So they brought that guy in a lot. But he also ran a shitload of quarterback power. So he is a decent player. Woodson's backup, I don't remember his name, but he ain't Woodson. Like, Woodson is kind of like one of a kind out there because he's a huge dude and he's fast.
Yeah, he is.
He had 200 yards on 23 carries.
Yeah, so. 23 carries. Like, as a quarterback, you can't take 23. You can't take hits on 23 carries.
Tailbacks don't get 20 anymore.
Yeah, right. Like, this is not the game of football that we know anymore. But moving on to football that we do know, let's talk about the top 10. Joe, over to you.
All right. You know, we got the Buckeyes at number one. They are not going anywhere after schwacking Ball State 56-3. But they do have the biggest test of the week coming up, going to Texas, where the Longhorns are actually a 1.5-point favorite. That's a 7:30 game, and obviously that'll be nationally broadcast. And number two, we got Oregon, who had a bit of a scare with a much more game Boise State team than people gave credit for. 34-27, the Ducks come out on top. They travel to Oklahoma State, where they are 22.5-point favorites right now. At number three, we got Georgia, another cupcake game, 63-3, Tennessee State. And they don't really step up much in competition, as they got Western Kentucky, where they're a 41-point favorite. At number four, we got Notre Dame, who embarrassed Wisconsin 41-13. And they actually have a cupcake game after their actual test. They got Rice, and they are a 44.5-point favorite.
Let me just say, that game really surprised me. I watched about half of that game thinking Wisconsin was going to come back at some point, and they just got smushed.
Yep. It did start off that way, too. Like, where it looked like they might be able to hang for a minute, but Notre Dame figured them out. But at number five, we got Texas, who destroyed Texas State 59-7. And like I said, they've got OSU coming to town and are 1.5-point favorites. So it's going to be probably the most watched game of the week. At number six, we got the Hoosiers of Indiana. They took it to North Texas 52-16. They're playing Howard, and there is no line available unless you go on FanDuel. I'm not even sure what it is. It's going to be big. At number seven, we got Miami, who handled Stanford 45-6 and made me look stupid with a monster performance from Malachi Toney of, I think he had 200 yards receiving and three tutties. They got Florida A&M coming into town, where they're 56-point favorites. At number eight, we got Texas A&M. They played Missouri State, beat them 50-0, so not much of a test. But they do have Arizona State coming into town, so that's a definite step up in competition. They are 14.5-point favorites currently. At number nine, we got Ole Miss, and boy, they just barely escaped a victory over Louisville, 41-38, in the earliest game with a ranked opponent of the week. They got Charlotte coming into town. The 49ers are a 46.5-point underdog. And number 10, we've got Oklahoma, who beat UTEP, Michigan's future opponent, who probably is looking forward to seeing Michigan after seeing Oklahoma 51-0. They are at Michigan, where they are 5.5-point favorites, and expect that line to move and move and move and move, because it's going to get bet way down. I bet it's double figures by Saturday.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, you know, as much as we'd like to see, like, look, I feel bad for Charlotte because they took a heartbreaker in triple overtime with the Citadel, man. Like, how do you lose on a 2-point conversion? Well, easy, right? You don't score enough points in regulation, but it went bad for them. And, you know, so they got a bad taste in their mouth, and then they got to travel to Ole Miss and get smacked around. So hopefully the check clears from Ole Miss and it's slightly larger than the check that they lost by playing the Citadel, because that game did not go the way that it anticipated. Like, it was a great game to watch, you know, especially the overtime. That was incredible, but, you know, certainly did not expect it to go that way. But top 25 upsets this week, there really weren't any upsets, but we did have a ranked-on-ranked matchup loss, and the first one of the year was Louisville losing to Ole Miss. That was a much, much closer game. I don't even anticipate Louisville falling out of the top 25 because that game was so close, right? It was a great contest, and it could have gone either way. But bottom line is, if week one is any indicator of how this season is going to be, it's going to be crazy, because – like, I texted the guys after watching the USC game, and like, it's not the topic this week, but we're going to keep watching it because we're probably going to have to deep dive it. But there is an officiating problem in the Big Ten right now. I think we can all say that. And then when the senior referee guy is going around talking about how the whole thing went down at Michigan, not to belabor the point, but he wasn't very convincing, right? Like the whole point of like an expert is to convince me that, like, okay, like, I'm not buying it, but at least it was a, you know, reasonable explanation. But it didn't even sound, you know, it didn't even sound reasonable. It was just like, all right, you're pumping definitely a lot of sunshine up somebody's butt, and nobody's really believing it right now. And speaking of pumping sunshine, or here's your cloud of gloom coming up with the Blue Falcon of the week.
Look, it's the Blue Falcon. Ooh.
Gentlemen, this one sucks for me. I make no mystery about who I cheer for. I'm Mason Blue through and through. I've been that way since I could say the words, go Blue. What I saw on Saturday, and aside from an embarrassing effort, was a visiting MAC school and a very game Western Michigan squad beat Michigan to the punch on defense, show more passion, more violence of action and enthusiasm. I watched them push Michigan around when they wanted to run the ball. They were better on special teams. Their sideline looked like a Mardi Gras compared to Michigan's sideline. It looked like the Walking Dead. And worst of all, the output of effort was so lopsided in favor of Western Michigan that it leaves me begging the question, what is going on in that locker room? Like I said, I was sitting in some great seats, and I got some good looks at head coach Kyle Whittingham's face. And gentlemen, the tells sent the red flags going off like I was on a blind date from my nightmares. The look on his face that didn't change for almost 3.5 quarters said to me, I have bitten off more than I can chew. I should have stayed retired. Could I be wrong about that? Of course. It just didn't look good. None of it looked good. And the product that was on the field for Michigan was unacceptable by a long shot. When you come out and lay an egg in your first game as the new head coach of a premier school with all the money and all the resources, it screams one of two things: lack of preparation or lack of players buying into your system and they're not doing the work. Neither of those things will be acceptable going into a season with a team as talented as Michigan claimed they were. For those reasons, along with millions of others, in case you catch my drift, this week's Blue Falcon Award unfortunately goes to the entire Michigan coaching staff. What you gentlemen showed the nation on Saturday night was that your team could not compete in the trenches with anyone. And if you think the press you're getting right now is bad, if this Michigan team comes out and plays that same type of football on Saturday, you will be embarrassed. Point blank, period. What Dustin Poirier say? It's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. The entire nation wants to watch you lose right now. And Brent Venables and the Oklahoma Sooners are going to oblige if you don't fix some glaring problems. Hell, at this point, I'd be happy if they were even competitive in that game. That's how bad what I saw on Saturday was. Easily the worst home opener since App State, and that Michigan team would have wiped the floor with what they put out on the field in Ann Arbor on Saturday.
Wow. All right, Joe, take a breath. And I'm wearing my Quit Being a Triggered Pansy t-shirt.
Serenity now.
Sorry. Yes, you could. You could buy that at the Veteran Trash Talk store. But the reality of it is like, I know that was hard for you. And I think as football fans, we want to see the best games possible. And, you know, one of the things that makes it very, very difficult is watching a game be determined by the by the referees, right? Like, I think anybody that's a college football fan is like, hey, look, if I can get it done in 60 minutes, let's get it done in 60 minutes. I mean, the 60 and 1 second has been trending all over social media for as an anti-Michigan trend.
Let's look at the resources and let's look at every reputable person that's ever been paid to evaluate high school talent. Michigan doesn't have a size disadvantage. They don't have a speed disadvantage, resources, numbers. And according to all the pundits, they don't have a talent disadvantage. So what was going on out there? Because Western Michigan, I'm telling you, Western Michigan's offensive line was getting a 3 and 4 yard push. And they weren't having problems picking up first downs on that defense, which I don't blame because they were out there all game.
Yeah.
So it was just, whew, man, it was like coming out and laying an egg in the opening of the season, and a win at the last minute that is going to be refuted till the end of time doesn't change anything.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the main thing. It's like, it's not the win or the loss that really matters. It's the controversy around it. Right. Again, it's not the passion for the game, it's the execution. But
well, let's put a pin in that until we figure out which, if any, G6 schools are going to make the college football playoff, because this win or lack thereof could matter a lot.
Yeah.
Or worse, Western Michigan wins all the way out, and the fact that this was a close game that, you know, didn't really get decided turns out to be a thing that, oh, let's just give it to them anyway. There's a lot of potential chaos here.
This really, you know, and that's a good call.
Very real point, because they could win the MAC.
If they win the MAC, then like that changes the whole calculus of everything that's going on. And the other piece of it is like, hey, do you bump somebody out? You know, because the Notre Dame clause in the college football playoff doesn't help anybody, particularly in the group of six, right?
No.
So speaking of people that have performed, though, over to you, Joe, for the Hold My Beer movie.
I drank the beer.
Yeah. Now that I feel like I need a shower after the Blue Falcon Award, let's move on to something more positive. There was a ton of great football this weekend, and I'm sure when I use these single play related Hold My Beer moments that there will be others that deserved honorable mentions as the season carries out. However, if you gentlemen did not watch any of the Indiana versus North Texas game, there was a moment that I think we should talk about. It came when the score was 0-0, and quarterback Josh Hoover let loose with a pass hunting for the end zone, and I thought, how in the hell is he going to catch that? And that's when junior wide receiver and Michigan State transfer from Detroit, Michigan native Nick Marsh said, hold my beer, watch this, and proceeded to come up with one of the sickest back shoulder one-hand grabs I've seen in a long time. I do believe we have a replay of it. Can we
steps into the throw, back shoulder, and it is caught. Nick Marsh, and he one-handed that thing, Mike.
Like he does it every day.
That's crazy. That's insane.
Definitely, hold my beer moment worthy catch. And I do feel bad for calling this an honorable mention, but the performance Malachi Toney had against Stanford deserves to be mentioned, as he went 12 receptions for 234 yards and 3 TDs to lead Miami to a blowout win. Absolutely incredible. And I think Malachi Toney, if he stays healthy, is going to be a Heisman finalist this year.
Yeah, I think he will as well. I mean, there's a lot of good athletic catches this weekend. So, I mean, it's week one. I'm sure there's going to be tons more, but it's always interesting to see like guys that are showing up like early in the season to see what changes, because like, you know, there's two things that we know. Sports writers are not very good analysts. And obviously, guys that are watching high school recruiting probably aren't doing as good a job as they should, because there's either guys that are way overrated coming into college football or way underrated coming into college football. And probably if you're a 2-star or 3-star person, that's probably accurate. Yep. But anything above that, it's questionable now. And anything below that is probably questionable too, just because we've seen it, the performances on the field. Yep. But, you know, the topic this week, and it's kind of got, you know, eroded away by all the other news in college football. But we talked about coaches on the hot seat last week, but this week we're talking about, you know, is Coach Prime done in Colorado? You know, and what I find interesting about that is there is a boatload of people that don't want to see Deion Sanders be successful, right? Don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, the dude's a Hall of Fame football player, outstanding baseball player, and he's a good coach. And I think there's two parts to it. Right. One, Deion cracked the code on name, image, and likeness when he was a player. Right. And so now he's using everything that he learned as an athlete to facilitate other athletes. I saw somebody bitching on social media like, oh my gosh, they have their Instagram handles on their jerseys. Like, bro, you're 3 years too late. Like, they were doing that at the very beginning. And if these kids are repping stuff and they're getting paid for name, image, and likeness and for the number of people that they have following them, then that's good for the student athlete. If we're going to allow them to get paid, let's let them do it legally, you know, unlike Brendan Sorsby. But anyway, let's pass it around the horn. We'll go to Omar, Joe, and then Dano. What are your thoughts? Is Prime done in Colorado? Because I have a different perspective on it. I'm sure you guys do too. Thanks.
Yeah, I don't think he's necessarily done in Boulder, honestly. I do think that he has regressed from 2024. And I think the fact that it appears that he needed a Heisman winner and probably the best quarterback they've had since Joel Klatt to reach the peak of going to an Alamo Bowl. So I don't want to say that the seed is like scorching right now, but I do think that it appears that he has peaked. What's interesting to me is what you mentioned, Rob, about NIL and how you wouldn't think that it would be easy to bring college kids to Lubbock, Texas. Cause I mean, I've driven there multiple times. Like, you can go in and out in 10 minutes, honestly. I'm sure it's a lovely town with lovely people, but doesn't scream NIL haven to me. But the fact that, you know, Texas Tech is able to do what they're doing with Cody Campbell, and like you mentioned with Coach Sanders, who's sure raking up his bag with Aflac commercials, right? He can't put in some of that NIL cachet, to produce a team that's making bowl games at the very least. I would have thought that they would have made a bowl game last year. So it doesn't look great this year. I think the win against Georgia Tech indicates that maybe Georgia Tech regressed a bit. But I mean, I'd say he has another year after this, honestly, just with how bad Colorado has been for the past 20 years.
Yeah, and that's fair. And as a guy who used to watch Colorado like in the 90s, back when they had, you know, Eric Bieniemy and Darian Hagan, that's a completely different, you know, like whole different giddy up nowadays than it was back then, right? And you also have to think, like, for Colorado to have the death blow sanction, you know, in the early 2000s, and to be fielding a team at all is pretty important. But, you know, over to you, Joe. Like, what are your thoughts? Because, like I said, I'm a Colorado fan, you know, from way back in the day, because they rocked the black and gold, and so that was part of it. But the reality of it is there's a, you know, they were a national championship contender, you know, in the 90s. I think the last really big game was that they beat Texas in the Big 12 championship, and like it was like 03 or 04, which was an outstanding game, by the way, if you pull that one up on YouTube and watch it. But, Joe, what are your thoughts? Like, how do you think things are going in Boulder?
See, I might have a different opinion here, because I feel like, you know, the Colorado team that I saw against Georgia Tech made it kind of look like, hey, maybe they have something. I mean, this team went 3-9 last year, coming in as a touchdown dog and winning outright against what people thought was a pretty tough and solid Georgia Tech team. Now, maybe Omar's right. Maybe they have regressed. To me, it was kind of a statement that they've taken a step forward from last year. With the staff that he brings in, I honestly thought the game plan, they planned it around that quarterback, and it wasn't a pretty victory. But they also, if they would have went in there and lost 28-14, no one would have made a fuss about it. So I think if Coach at Prime wants to step up to the next level, that his coaching window is starting to narrow, and he does need a couple of good years at Colorado if he's going to make a step up somewhere else. So otherwise, they'll discount what he's done, whether it's right or wrong. Because this is going to go off script a little bit, but Deion has always rubbed people the wrong way because he doesn't dance to the same music. He's always been unapologetically himself.
Yeah.
And
that's fair.
People can't get past that. So I think it's too early to tell, but the season will probably give us a better bead on his intended future. You know, if they end up going 9-3 and making a bowl game, you know, who's to say? He's got NFL coaches coming in to help him out. Who's to say maybe he doesn't make a run at Colorado and try and make a go of it with a promotion somewhere?
Yeah, for sure. Dano, how about you?
I have not seen this discourse. And when you were started talking about it, I was like, wait, really? Because they just beat Georgia Tech. Everybody said Georgia Tech was pretty good. And I'm looking at the stats. 49 carries, 183 yards. They lost two fumbles, still beat, you know, still came back and won this game. Had 8 tackles for loss, 3 sacks. Like, this is not a guy who's checked out. This is not a guy.
The defense is what looked better. I agree, Dan. Yeah.
I mean, this is not like Colorado's in a tough spot. You know, they're not in the SEC. They're not in the freaking Big Ten. So they're kind of in the nowhere land of what used to be the Pac-12, Big 12, whatever. You know, it's like a definite also ran as far as conferences go. And yet I can only go by what I've seen on the field. And so far they won the game that they weren't supposed to win. You know, let's see how they do. But I didn't think one bad year last year was a disaster. So,
yeah, I think the other part of, I think the other part of it is there's a lot of people that just don't like him because of the way that he did business. Right. He came in the first year and was like, look, you guys were recruited to a losing team. Y'all are losers. Y'all need to find another place to go.
But that happens everywhere. Happily for Deion Sanders, you've got Lane Kiffin now prepared to take on the role of supervillain in college football. So,
yeah, right.
You know,
and just when you look at by comparison, like those two people, right, those guys are diametrically opposed. Right. You've got a guy that, you know, thanks God every time he has a press conference versus the guy that's like, you know, schmoozing freaking judges to get NFL caliber players on his team. Like who do you want to be anti towards? Right. And again, it's college football. Everybody roots for who they root for. Everybody roots against who they root against. So I personally don't care, but from a perspective, I think legitimately Deion Sanders puts butts in seats, right? He puts butts in seats. And that's been the biggest change for the University of Colorado at Boulder in years, is having Deion come there and just bring people into the stadium. They're selling out the stadium. Absolutely. And so from that perspective, it allows them to grow as a team. It gets more eyeballs on you. Yeah, we can all say that, like, yeah, we had the Power Four, but like we know the Big 12 is kind of like the lowest rung, and Texas Tech is probably the only legitimate contender, you know, in that conference, to be honest, right? Like if they go through and run through, like we saw what happened to TCU a few years back when they made it into the championship. So there's probably some truth to it. Like I think Deion's probably in a similar boat as Bill Belichick, right? Like, hey, if you keep winning, we're going to be happy. If you stumble, we're going to be, you know, the pitchforks will be out and we'll be standing in front of your house. But I don't think that he's going to go just quite yet, because every time if you watch a Colorado home game, it's sold out. There are people in the stands and you can't deny that.
I would think they'd have to be insane, because who are you going to replace him with? Are you going to replace him? Because we were talking about Eric Bieniemy and Cordell Stewart. That's 30 years ago. Colorado went away for a while.
Yeah,
they were irrelevant for a little bit. And Deion has, you know, whether they like it or they don't like it, like you said, he's put butts in seats.
Yeah. And
put a lot of eyes on Colorado that weren't there.
Well, and here's the other part that we really have to talk about, right? He's got an eye for talent. Think about it from this perspective. Like, yeah, Shador being Shador, like, hey, like it doesn't help that he worked out with Tom Brady and he's like probably there's a talent gap between him and a lot of other players that were out there. However, Deion was the only person that took a risk on a kid that ended up being a Heisman Trophy winner, Travis Hunter, right? And Travis Hunter played more snaps in college football than anyone the entire time that he has worn a uniform in college football, to include, you know, Frank Harris, who's stayed at UTSA for 17 years, right? So, in the time that he was there, Travis Hunter played more football than Frank Harris, like total snaps. So you have to understand that, like, a guy that has that eyeball for the talent and is willing to assume risk on a kid like that and bring him in, like, don't you want that guy as your coach? You know, maybe, but maybe not.
Like I said, I didn't see this discourse, and I feel like some of these people are too terminally online, and it's time to log off and watch the games.
Yeah,
think about what your best alternative is.
Yeah, think of it this way. Yeah. Social media is a wretched hive of scum and villainy, and we say that all the time because, like, people that listen to the echo chamber and stay there and don't touch grass every now and then really don't understand that, like, hey, being a coach in college football is hard, particularly now with name, image, and likeness. So much so that probably the greatest coach of our lifetime, Nick Saban, said, I am out. I can't do this anymore, right? So if it drives Saban to quit, like, hats off to all these guys that are continuing to pursue this, knowing that the environment has changed so drastically. But speaking of changing so drastically, we have somebody who's been very, very consistent in helping people find their mortgage, even though the mortgage process has changed very drastically over time. Dano, over to you. Tell us about Craig.
I will. Friends, if you have watched this show before, you know that we have a sponsor here, and he is Craig Oxane. He is a member of the West Point class of 1994. He is a mortgage broker, area sales manager for the Money Store, licensed to lend in all 50 states, but based out of Chicago. Friends, Craig is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country because he gives you first-class service, super competitive rates, and he's freaking approachable. The mortgage process is super confusing. Interest rates moving all over the place. You're trying to get your house appraised, trying to get it inspected. You got all this crazy stuff going on. They're going to make you sign legitimately 2 inches of paperwork before they let you actually have the keys to this house. As you're doing all this, you're going to have questions, right? And you want to be able to ask those questions to the man who's going to know, and that's Craig. And this, by the way, is how we stay in business here at Ask for Football. It's how the West Point Network functions, right? Craig is helping us here. We're trying to help you by introducing you to the man you need to meet if you're looking for a mortgage. Plus, Craig doesn't charge lending fees for veterans. It's a huge savings. It's like $1,300, guys. Save yourself $1,300. I'm telling you. So Craig Oxane, area sales manager for the Money Store. Check him out. His link is on our website. Just go to askforfootball.com. All of our sponsors have these little business cards there. You just click on the little business cards. You'll be talking to them in a couple of hours, a couple of days, whatever. I'm telling you, it's too easy.
Thanks, Dano. So we're going to move on to week two. Of course, we will start with the American Conference. It's going to be an interesting week this week in the American. There's some finally in-conference matchups that are happening. We got two teams that are starting their conference matchups early, and that's going to be Army and Navy. But starting off on the slate, you've got on ESPNU, App State and East Carolina kicks at noon. Over-under is 56.5. Right now, the line when I pulled it was 11.5 for East Carolina favored. South Florida, Army. Army opens up their conference schedule against USF. That's going to be a good game. I mean, the line is moving. It started at 4.5. It dropped down to 1 and 1.5.
Got a whole show about this one that we just did.
Yeah.
It's just released.
If you don't have the opportunity, just go check out the Ask for Football Army football show. It'll go much deeper in depth on that. And they'll also preview the opponent. So you'll have a much more understanding of what's going on. Penn State at Temple. That's interesting. I mean, I guess it makes sense to play it in the pro stadium, get more butts in seats. I'm assuming that that will be interesting. The American has struggled early against the Power Four and don't see that one going in a positive trend. However, Temple may play keep away and keep it a lot closer than the experts think, because they've been running a lot more recently. And so the Temple offense has the ability to keep the ball out of the hands of Penn State. We'll see what happens. That's going to be on ESPN2. It kicks at noon on Saturday. UTSA at Texas State. Shootout on the CW. Like, they need to call that the CW shootout. UTSA is favored by 1.5. The over-under is 63.5. So hold on to your horses, folks, because like there's going to be some thoroughbreds running back and forth up and down the field. That's going to be a great game to watch if you like a high-scoring contest. That one's one of those, totally cliche. Whoever has the ball last is probably going to win that game. You've got ULM at UAB. That should be an interesting one because ULM usually plays most teams tough. They have a really stout defense year upon year. UAB, like, who knows what you're going to get? They're like the mystery bag, from week to week. Some weeks they play really, really good, and I think it has to do with, like, preparation, and then others they don't. So we'll see what happens. That one's going to be on the plus at 3:30 on Saturday. UAB is favored by 9.5. The over-under is 52.5. Rice at Notre Dame. Sorry, Rice. They got to go down to put it touchdown Jesus. That'll be on NBC and Peacock. Notre Dame is favored by 44.5. Over-under is 52.5. So they're saying maybe a touchdown and a field goal for Rice. I think Rice is a little bit better than that, but
they might not be.
Yeah. UNLV at North Texas. That'll be an interesting game. That kicks at 3:45. That'll be on ESPNU. And then the American matchup of the week, which I would recommend you watch, is going to be Memphis at Boise State. I think that's going to be the best game in the American to watch, even though it's out of conference. Boise State was really good against Oregon, gave them a scare. I know, like, Dan Lanning was chewing on Tums for the second half of that game. And, Memphis is good. We'll see what happens. That kicks at 7 on ESPN Plus. So if you don't have the Plus this season, you're going to miss out on a lot of American coverage.
That one's on USA Network, according
to the outline. I'm sorry. Yeah. I apologize for that one. Tulsa at Sam Houston's going to be on ESPN Plus. That should be a good game. Sam Houston is decent this year. Tulsa is
also looks better than decent.
Tulsa might be a sleeper in the American.
Yeah.
Maybe too early to call. If they get past Sam Houston, then like they're going to be a legit contender, I think. South Alabama at Tulane. That'll be an interesting game. Tulane is favored by 10, but Tulane looks bad this year, man. Like, I don't even know. Like, that one's probably going to be much, much closer than the experts think. Take the under for sure on that one. Navy at Florida Atlantic. Line wasn't out when I set this up, but.
I have it. Keep talking. I'll find it.
Okay. But Navy at Florida, like, Navy looks good. They have a good rushing offense. Florida Atlantic, they struggled with FIU. Could not. They made FIU's defense look really good.
No. That was
South Florida. South Florida. But Florida Atlantic, we'll see what happens. Navy is going to run the ball. We'll see if Florida Atlantic has any answers.
Navy by 4.5.
Navy by 4.5.
Over and under 59.5.
Yeah. So they're expecting that one to be close. Of course, Vegas is at least. Charlotte at Old Miss, like that one's going to be a drubbing, unfortunately, and that's just going to be another one of the American Power Four woes this week. Moving on to the top 25 games, you got Florida A&M and Miami, as previously mentioned. Villanova at Louisville. As much as we would like to see Villanova do well, I think Louisville has too much offensive juice. Hold on your hats for that one. You've got Missouri at Kansas. We don't care right now. Do we think the border war is going to end up in an upset? Like, I'm upset because, like, here we are. We're going into 3 weeks of college football, and then the first 3 weeks between week zero and week two, we've had a rivalry game every week, which is just –
that's crazy. It's nuts.
Those need to be, like, middle to the second half of the season, to be honest, right? We got Oklahoma and Michigan. We already talked about that one. I think buckle up if you're a Michigan fan. Sorry, Joe. I think that one's going to be – that's going to be an
apology necessary. The truth needs to be told.
That's going to be a beating. And then hey, anybody want to see a dead body? And look, John Mateer is on a mission this year. He wants to be in the Heisman conversation, and in order for him to do that, he's got to do it with his arms, with his legs, and he's finally healthy. And so if he has an opportunity to hang 50 on Michigan, he will. Being really honest, that's the truth. So you got Oregon and Oklahoma State. Oregon's going to try and get that bad taste out of their mouth. They're going to hang 50 or more on Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State did not look good. Like, seeing that the entire Tulane offense transferred into Oklahoma State, we assumed good things.
No, you're in T. Sorry, North Texas.
North Texas.
Yes, did not look good. You're right.
Yeah, Oklahoma State has most of North Texas's offense and Drew Westermaker, who's the highest paid quarterback in the NIL era, and they could not produce. So that's going to be an interesting game. That kicks at noon on ESPN. Got Arizona State at Texas A&M. This is the noon block. Howard at Indiana. Nobody cares. We already talked about Penn State and Temple. Western Kentucky at Georgia. Why? The SEC needs to force these dudes to start taking their conference schedule a little bit more seriously and start playing their conference games earlier, right? Like, everybody knows towards the end of the season, there's always cupcake games. We got it. But, like, to have three in a row, like, it doesn't help. The eye test, like, oh, you beat a school that you were supposed to beat by 50. You've got Arizona at BYU. We already mentioned that one. Utah State at Washington. Like, the Apple Cup was okay, but again, not the greatest day to watch. I hate watching rivalry games this early in the year. Alabama at Kentucky. If this was basketball, I would probably watch it, but it's not. So, I think Kalen DeBoer is trying to put it together. You know what I mean? Like, he's trying to put a championship run, and Alabama could quietly do it just because there's so many eyeballs on LSU. That's bottom line. So you got UC Davis at SMU. Sorry, UC Davis. They're going to hang 100,000 points on you. You've got Southern at Houston. That's another one of those games. Like, why are we doing these? But again, hopefully Southern gets a good paycheck out of it. Tennessee and Georgia Tech. That's 7 o'clock. These are the early evening window. So you got 7 o'clock on ESPN. Tennessee is favored by 10.5. Given that, I would probably take that line if it was even more than that, just because the way that Georgia Tech played against Colorado. They have some offensive issues. They do have some great special teams, and that may be the difference, but Georgia Tech did not look good. National game of the week, I think everybody's going to be watching this one. If you're a serious college football fan, Ohio State and Texas is probably the one that everybody should be watching, and that's going to be the nightcap on ABC. And then others coming around, you've got Louisiana Tech at LSU. That'll be an interesting one to watch for like a quarter. And then, like, Lane Kiffin's going to try and hang 100 points on Louisiana Tech. Why? Because he needs the recruits, so he's going to find the best players on that team and try and get them to transfer before the game starts. You've got the Cy-Hawk Trophy kicking at 7 on Peacock and NBC. Upset alert, is Ohio State on the bubble this week, right? Like, I think Arch Manning, this is going to be which quarterback plays the best. Whoever plays the cleanest game in that game is going to win it, right?
Arch Manning. Can I ask what the line is, just so we can get a sense of how much the upset could be? How much?
Texas is a 1.5 point favorite.
Yeah. So theoretically, we're saying Ohio State should really be a better team. It's just that they're on the road.
I believe they are a better team.
Okay.
Yeah. 1.5 points, you know, but hey, the one thing that Texas has going for them, they got a quarterback by the name of Manning, and they have a wide receiver with the coolest. Well, they have the wide receiver with the coolest name in college football, and that's Hollywood Smothers. So he transferred from NC State to Texas. And so now Arch has some more targets. So, like I said, this is going to legitimately come down to which quarterback plays the best game, to be honest. Right. I don't think there's any doubt. When I set the outline up, it was like, hey, Michigan has a chance to upset Oklahoma. That ain't happening. And then Missouri at Kansas. Kansas, again, Kansas is a good team. Depends on who shows up, right? If they play a clean game, they can win that game. If they don't, they will lose that one pretty badly. All right. Now, moving on. Top three FCS games of the week for you to watch. The number one is Montana State at Nevada. I think that one will be a good one. Montana State, you know, is one of the programs in FCS that everybody is going, please move up because we're tired of losing to you, right? And so they're in the driver's seat, I think, year upon year. You got UC Davis at SMU. That would be an interesting matchup as well. And then, of course, Villanova at Louisville. Those are all going to be high-profile games just because of the opponents and the time that they kick off. Omar, we will pass this over to you because I know you got some thoughts on these FCS games before we move on.
Okay, wow. Glad to be put on the spot, but luckily I can talk about all these. The Montana State one's interesting. I'm pretty sure they're unanimous number one. I should know. I vote in the poll, but I'm pretty sure they're unanimous number one. Nevada was interesting, and I'll mention that in my locks the week later on. Like, probably the biggest surprise in a good way this past weekend. Like, I don't think anyone saw them beating Western Kentucky by how much they did, and it's great that one's on the CW. UC Davis, SMU. UC Davis might be a little bit overrated, I think, in terms of their rank. They almost lost to I think they spotted Portland State 21 points. Portland State is probably the worst program in the Big Sky, but it should be interesting. Maybe SMU has declined after last night's game, showed against Florida State. And then, excuse me, Villanova at Louisville. All I have to say is if Villanova wins this one, it probably wouldn't be considered a forfeit because I think there's still that back and forth with Villanova's quarterback, Pat McQuaid, the sixth-year starter in the Patriot League. So this one actually might count. I don't know if the Patriot League's bluffing. Or if they're going to be the SEC.
I don't think the Patriot League is bluffing. Well, yeah. What do you have? Why would you even bluff if you're the Patriot League? What do you care?
I don't know. I think they're bluffing, honestly, because at this point, like, they would have made a statement saying that, okay, you beat Bucknell, it doesn't count. Like, it's Tuesday. They haven't said anything. I think it's a bluff. Okay.
All right.
I hope they put the hammer down because, like I mentioned in the week zero, like, you know, let's protect the Patriot League and these academic conferences. You know,
absolutely. We don't need this. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. You can play 15 years in college football, apparently, but for Christ's sake, don't do it in the Patriot League.
Yeah, for real. Like, how many degrees are you going to have? He's going to be a full-on medical doctor by the time he finishes playing football. Anyway, we will move on to our weekly locks.
Weekly locks.
Dano, over to you.
I went 2-1 last week. I have now 4-2 overall, which is not too damn bad. Duquesne obviously helped me by going scoreless. Temple covered pretty easily against a good URI team. Saw a lot of prognosticators taking Rhode Island, which is stupid. And Arkansas State and Memphis got into an unexpected shootout, and that cost me. So much for the vaunted Memphis D-line. Although they do get after the sacks, but they do not stop the run. So, alas. So give me Cal at Syracuse, -3.5. So I'll take the Cuse to cover. They always seem to play well at the start of the season, and that is a long road trip for a Cal team that I think is probably about mediocre. I don't know if Syracuse is better, but I do think that home advantage is big. So here you go, Rob, taking advantage of your new rules. This is my upset money line pick, UTSA over Texas State. Pick the upset. UTSA dropped a very winnable addition to this game last year. It's only a point and a half. And unlike a lot of the rest of the G6, the Roadrunners actually return a decent number of starters with a lot of talent. Coach Traylor isn't really on the hot seat, but dude, he has had arguably the best roster in the American for a few years, and he can't put it together. And if he doesn't get it together this year, I think the dude might actually be on the hot seat, which is incredible because I think he's a great coach. So
yeah, and I mean, what, the only teams that he's lost to at home have been coached by Jeff Monken. Right? Yeah. That's it. Like if you go to the Alamo,
except for Texas State, they came in there last year and whooped him. Right, at the beginning of the season.
But for the most part, if you're in the American Conference and you play at the Alamo Dome, you're taking an L. Unless you're losing. Right? Like, so it's going to be interesting to see.
My last pick, Memphis at Boise State, over 55.5.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. All right, Joe, how about you?
Yeah, I went 1-2. Oish. Georgia Tech let me down. And Memphis did come through and cover for me, though. But this week, I'm rolling right back with three, and I can't state it loud enough. Oklahoma, -5.5 at Michigan. I hate to say it, but you can take this lock to the bank. Michigan is out of sorts on offense and underwhelming on defense after they've been on the field for three quarters. Brent Venables does not waste the opportunity to make a statement. I believe that's exactly what they do on Saturday. I've got Oklahoma 31-13, and it could be worse. But lock this up from the biggest Michigan fan you know. At number two, this is going to be some interest. This is going to be interesting the way I finish these off. But at number two, I've got the Army Black Knights, -3.5. After a 56-point beating, they laid on Bryant in a very close game South Florida had at home with Florida International. I feel like this is going to be an Army-dominated run game where Army wins by a touchdown. I just see them playing a lot of ball control and shortening this game up, and they do that better than anybody. And that's almost how Western – that's how Western did what they did to Michigan. And you talk about a lot of quarterback power. I saw a lot of it Saturday night. And then at number three, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm taking Navy -4.5 at FIU. This is going to sound just like my last pick, but after Navy blew out Townsend and FIU got crushed by Florida, I feel like Navy will come in and take it over with their run game. FIU won't have an answer, and Navy will win by 10.
Point of order, FAU, not FIU.
Why did I say FA? My bad.
That's all right.
Now, there's some confusion on that today because I did the same thing.
Omar, FIU is the team that South Florida just played.
Correct.
FAU, my
fault. Florida International, i.e. Pitbull University. Florida Atlantic, i.e. Lane Kiffin's original D1 landing spot.
Got it. My fault.
Omar. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so last week was kind of rough. Air Force saved me from going 0-3. I just want to talk about the VMI Virginia Tech thing. I know I put it – I don't know if you guys put it out on the show, but on my podcast, I said I find it a very – I found, like, I'm very hard-pressed to believe that Virginia Tech would cover 54.5 points against a triple option. Well, VMI had probably the worst performance from any triple option offense I've seen in my 20 years of watching college football. 43 carries, -4 yards. The reads there.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
God almighty.
It was hard to watch, but I just loved the triple option so much that I kept watching and trying to analyze and you know, just I just love the option that much. Air Force saved me. North Dakota State. Honestly, North Dakota State was a half point from salvaging the week. They were -30.5, 38-0 for them. They let off the dogs too soon. Oh, well. It is what it is. So this week, I'm liking Rice +43.5 on Notre Dame. I think Rice will be able to run the option well enough and run off enough clock to prevent them from losing by 6 touchdowns. And I really like their quarterback. I like Ja'Kari Brown. He's a great athlete, highly recruited. And that's kind of the advantage of running a scheme like that at a non-service academy. You can attract highly touted talent like that, like, and kind of have like a last chance guy at quarterback who's really athletic and, you know, can, you know, transcend the game a little bit. So I like Rice plus 43.5 on Notre Dame. I think people are selling Rice short. I'm excited about Rice this year, honestly. Then I'm going to take the over on FAU Navy. Right now it's at 59.5. And watching Navy this past weekend, I was shocked by some of these coverage breakdowns they were having against Towson. A couple of deep balls, and that's a Towson offense that struggled against me, could only score 18 points. They didn't reach that much, but they looked, I mean, they looked better against against Navy. Maybe it was just Navy's rust playing their first game. But on FAU's end, they allowed over 600 yards to Florida, including 281 yards on the ground. I think this one has a chance to be a shootout where FAU is constantly playing catch up but making it interesting. So I think the over, that's one of my locks at 59.5. And then for my final one, I got Georgia 40.5 on Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky, I think this line is because people are telling themselves, or Vegas is telling themselves, surely Western Kentucky can't be this bad, because I can't remember the last time that Western Kentucky has been bad. But like I said, they lost 49-14 to Nevada, and I was on the record of saying that the cupboard was bare for Nevada entering this year. Apparently it's not bare, or apparently Western Kentucky's just really bad. So I don't see this ending well for Western Kentucky. So Georgia minus 40.5 on Western Kentucky.
Nice. All right, so moving on, I'll go through mine really quick. I'm 2-4 on the season already. I went 1-2 last week. I think everybody in the Firsty Club Picks League went 1-2, with the exception of Dave Graves, who went 3-0 because he had three straight money line picks, right? So if you just take the money line, you get points, and that may be the difference in the game. And so this week, I'm taking App State money line at ECU. I'm not going to call the upset because I don't want to lose another 1.5 points if I'm wrong on that one. Take Boise to cover 8.5 against Memphis. I think Memphis is good. Boise is better. Just the show that they put on against Oregon, I think the Boise State offense is going to cover 8.5 easily. They'll probably win by 2 scores. Take UCF to cover 6.5 at Pitt. The return of Scott Frost at UCF has been interesting, you know, and they came out guns blazing last week, and I think the Golden Knights of UCF are going to make another fake national championship run. So they're going to try and bump off somebody that's won a bowl game and call it the national championship. But I think it'll be interesting. Pitt is usually good. They usually run pretty deep in the season. I think they lost, week 10 or week 11 last year. So, I mean, it's quite possible that this game is close, but I think UCF actually has a decent offense. And since they've been in the Big 12, you know, guess what? Big 12 plays no defense. So I'm going to take the 6.5, but I might, you know, if I was a betting man, I would also take the over, because I think those two teams are going to score a lot of points. So that's it for me. However, we've got one last thing to plug before we get out of here, and I know that there's been a couple of changes, so we've got some new and interesting information. So, Greg is freaking jacked and swolled and juicy. If you like to work out and you need a new coach, here's your opportunity. At 50 years old, most men are told to slow down. Greg Iannacelli earned his IFBB Pro card by winning the overall championship at the USA Masters National Champions in Las Vegas last week for men's classic physique. Greg is a class of 97 graduate. He is the CEO and founder of Warriors Physique Fitness and is a U.S. Army Master Fitness Trainer, NCI certified level 2 nutrition coach with over 35 years of hand-on experience building real physiques at every age, and he has done it himself. Active duty veterans and military, active duty veterans and West Point alumni get an exclusive military discount on Greg's coaching services. Take the guesswork out of your next workout. Book your free 25-minute consultation at warriorsphysiquefitness.com. Make the decision to become the warrior that God created you to be. Like all of our sponsors, Greg has a business card on the website. Click on it and you'll be talking to him in no time, and he'll get back to you in a day or two. But here's your opportunity to kind of shake off the rust and get back into the gym and make a change that's positive in 2026. Anybody have a favorite thing?
I'll say.
All right.
My favorite thing about the game that I complained so much about was watching my son, who, yes, he's an inch taller than me, walk into the big house for the first time and get a record of it, and then watch him during Mr. Brightside, and then to see his face light up when all of a sudden Michigan wins was worth every second to me. That was my favorite thing this weekend, was being able to share a game with him for the first time, even if it was a putrid Michigan performance. Having him there made it worth every minute of being out there. It was fun. That was definitely my favorite thing.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, that's good to hear. So, yeah, college football, man. That's what it's about, right? Sharing experience with the people in the stands with you. Sometimes they're your loved ones. Sometimes they're complete and total strangers, but they're all good people, right? So let's wrap this thing up for week two. Hey, I'm your host, Rob, the Angry Colonel, calling to you out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We've got Dano Icabesa calling to you out of Coastal Connecticut. We got Omar, the Burger Popper, calling to you out of Oklahoma. And Trigger Joe is calling to you from the home of the Big House. This has been the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable, or you can call us Ring Knocker Radio. Doesn't matter to us as long as you're tuning in, and we'll see you guys next week. And as always, beat Navy.
Beat him.
Thanks for joining us on the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. Special thanks to our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're buying or selling, reach out to Jocelyn for expert service. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/askforfootball. Your support will help keep the lights on and bring in more great content. Plus, you'll get access to exclusive perks and behind-the-scenes extras. Thanks for being a part of the Ask for Football community. Go Army, beat Navy, and we'll catch you guys next week.